Medical Matters.
16 minutes after 8 o'clock, I'm joined by Dr. Kasturi Moodley. She is an obstetrician, a gynecologist at Mediclinic Southern Africa. She joins us now to have this discussion around IVF. Dr. Moodley, thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate your time.
Oh, it's only a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
So IVF, in vitro fertilization, is something that many of us are looking to deal with issues of infertility. But if you could give us, please, Doctor, a background of this technology. What is it all about? How does it work?
So IVF, in essence, is in vitro fertilization, as you mentioned. And the word essentially means in vitro, the making of a baby in an area outside of the human body. So we know naturally a baby is made inside the body, is grown by the uterus, and is then delivered 9 months later. But if certain problems exist in certain processes or organ systems or pathways that are necessary for a baby to be made and to grow, then IVF allows us to do those processes outside of the human body in a laboratory and still be able to allow a person to go on to have a baby.
And who typically seeks this intervention, Doc?
So by definition, if a couple has been trying for a baby for 12 months or more with no contraception and regular intercourse, then they ideally fulfill the criteria for further investigations to see what is the problem, where is the problem, can it be fixed, and if it can't be fixed, then what may be an appropriate fertility intervention to do that can improve their chances of falling pregnant.
12 months?
But 12 months.
Okay.
That's in general, by definition, on paper. However, we understand that every patient and every couple's circumstances differ.
Yep.
And so you may have a couple that is getting very, very anxious even after a few months of trying. And so our advice to our patients is, if whilst you're trying, you are now getting very, very anxious each month that passes and you get a period which signifies that you are not pregnant, then we advise, come through and see us. You are still suitable to have the investigations to give you the peace of mind, to know whether there is or there isn't a problem, to give you options going forward.
Give us a call at 11-883-0702 if you found yourself in the reality that Dr. Moodley is talking about. Have you sought counsel? Have you sought assistance perhaps from an obstetrician or a gynecologist in this sense? In other words, looking for an IVF intervention. Please give us a call at 11-883-0702. It is a very emotive, very, very difficult moment to go through, the desire to be parents and not being able to fall pregnant. I say this because I have personal experience of this, Dr. Moodley. And it appears to me that very often the issue is less physical than it is psychological. It appears sometimes to me that when people are very anxious, then they exacerbate the problem of falling pregnant. Talk to me about that.
I think you're absolutely 100%. And yeah, sorry that you had to go through that yourself.
I'm good now. I got three.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
I think it is so emotive and so emotionally charged because it is an entity that is meant to happen naturally, that every individual considers is going to happen naturally when they're ready to try. And when it doesn't, automatically one considers themselves to be the problem. And then there's so much of blame and there's so much of shame. And then there's where the emotional charge becomes. And there's where the psychological entity and aspect becomes, where people don't just look at it or regard it as a medical entity or phenomenon, just like diabetes, just like hypertension, just like any other medical condition in which any organ fails or doesn't function in the manner in which it was meant to. And so that then that notion and the uncertainty of knowing what is going on, what is the problem, then leads to all the fueled stress levels, anxiety levels, unhealthy lifestyles, and the very, very negative circle that then tends to evolve from there before an individual or couple eventually finds the right route to get to the bottom of the problem and for the couple to understand, well, what are the solutions available?
I bring that up, Doc, because I want to sort of move it out of the way, because the reality is that there are issues of a, shall we say, of a physiological, technical, physical nature that IVF then responds to, right?
100%. So, like I intonated, when we see a couple and we obviously take a very detailed history to get to the background of what is going on in that couple. And then we do very baseline tests and investigations to get to the bottom of the structures and organs that play a vital role in getting an egg to be released, to an egg being fertilized, to it landing back in the uterus, and to grow as a baby. And so those tests give us insight into where the problem is, what is the problem, can it be fixed? If it cannot be fixed, then to bypass those areas with a fertility treatment like IVF.
Do you think sometimes, Doc, that practitioners in this space, obstetricians, gynecologists, are sometimes a little too quick to diagnose and say that there is probably no chance of pregnancy? I say this because that was what happened to me. I think, you know, and it was said so definitively that it didn't leave any room for interpretation. In other words, that what was said was, listen, but, you know, your sperm are too lazy. Best think about adoption or other ways of being a parent, but it's not going to happen for you. Do you think that sometimes that some people get a little bit too trigger happy in this space?
100%. Unfortunately, us in the medical fraternity, we're by no means God. We don't play God. We just use the information and tools that we have to offer the best expertise that we have. And unfortunately, oftentimes, even in our own experience, we had a 23-year-old young lady who came through to us in tears about 4 to 5 years ago, who was told the exact same thing. She had a hormonal imbalance that was easily fixable, but was told at that consultation she will never have children. And 5 years down the line, with the assistance of IVF, and actually a spontaneous conception after, because essentially there was no actual physical problem. Mm-hmm. We had a baby with a fertility treatment, and she then went on to conceive spontaneously and now has a lovely family of two. So you are not alone in this, where I think, unfortunately, sometimes maybe we don't use the choices of words, maybe we don't use the choices of descriptions, and maybe sometimes we're a little bit too quick to make a judgment before we have all the information.
Yeah. I say this because, you know, it feels so final. So final when a medical practitioner says, listen, you have no real chances of being a parent. Sorry, you know. And it can have major psychological, existential, cultural problems of ostracization and so forth. And maybe that's something we can talk about as we continue. What tests and what organs, what, I suppose my question is a physiological one. At a technical level, what is it that would then bring a conscientious practitioner, a conscientious obstetrician and gynecologist to the point where they say, now we can conclusively say that the required intervention here is IVF?
I think, so as a general, as an obstetrician gynecologist, when we see our patients, just their general well-being or with regards to fertility-related issues, we give them an overall well-being from our general examination. But when it comes to actual fertility, we can then go a step further, either in our own capacity as obstetrician gynecologists or refer a patient to a fertility institution or clinic where the further investigations and interventions can then be advised. So the three main interventions that we do are for one very specific hormonal profile related to a woman's ovaries and the ability of the ovaries to be able to get a follicle to grow, to release an egg. So essentially, an individual's fertility potential or reserve, the potential in that ovary to be able to make a baby. Then we do a fallopian tube test, which is to assess the patency of both the fallopian tubes. Obviously, they play a very important role in the egg and sperm meeting and transporting the embryo back into the uterus. And obviously, equally important is a proper semen analysis to determine whether the sperm sample is suitable to be able to get into an egg and start the process of a baby.
Is there a way of checking sometimes whether a couple is actually compatible? I don't know why. This question just come up in my head right now as I'm talking to you. Is there a way of checking whether a couple is compatible for the process of making a baby, Doc? Because of this, this is the reason why I asked this question. A couple can be trying for the longest time with negative sort of results. Sorry, it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. And then that couple splits. They meet other people. And then there is a baby on both sides. But the man finds somebody else and there's a baby. And the woman finds somebody else and there's a baby. But when these two were together, there was no baby. Explain that to me, Doc.
So as a medical professional, I'm going to give you the physiological insight into that based on the test I just described.
Yep.
So as a medical professional, the only way that we can assess compatibility is to look at, like I said, the ability of that ovary to get a follicle, which is a precursor to an egg, to be able to grow, to release a good enough egg. Now, when we talk about a good enough egg, when that egg is naturally in a fallopian tube, it is not visible to anybody because it's microscopic. So we will never know if that egg is sitting at 100% or 99 or 98 as far as its readiness to be fertilized by sperm. And when the sperm comes along, we will never know at that point in time, because it's all happening microscopically, if that egg is ready to accept the sperm, and if when the sperm gets into the egg, together they are ready and have the energy and the potential to form an embryo, which is the starting point of a baby. So that, in essence, is compatibility from a male and female perspective.
Yep.
So that if there's a problem with an egg, and if there's a problem with the sperm from the male and female, then definitely there will not be an embryo, there will not be a positive pregnancy test, there will not be a baby.
So
the investigations that I mentioned, if we do that in every single patient and couple, we will then have insight into their compatibility, where if there is potential problem with ovarian reserve, we can say that the problem is with the female. If there's a significant problem with the sperm, then we can say the problem is with the male, which is probably then why, when they meet other people, in whom there isn't a problem, then the compatibility results in a baby.
Okay. 011-883-0702. Any issues, infertility issues that you might like to discuss with Dr. Moodley? Dr. Kasturi Moodley is an obstetrician and a gynecologist at MediClinic Southern Africa. And we're just talking about all of the issues connected to infertility, but centered on the intervention that is IVF?
In vitro
fertilization. That's right. Give us a call and any issues that you may have around that subject on 011-883-0702. Somebody's asking me about cost, Dr. Moodley, the cost of the IVF itself. What are the costs related to this?
It's a very difficult it's a very difficult number to throw out there, and most individuals do get quite apprehensive and anxious with regards to the cost implications of IVF. Suffice it to say, the first step that I say to my patients is, we have to see you, do the baseline test, figure out whether you are a suitable candidate for the process, and in that context, discuss with you what IVF actually entails, and then apply the cost implication to that. So obviously the costs can vary, but I think it's better discussed in the context of if that is suited for you. If I throw a figure out there right now, it's going to make a patient even more anxious and automatically think, but I can't afford this. But I think when in the context of what I just described, then I think it's much, much easier to figure out. So certainly we can provide that information with our email address and our Facebook page and Instagram. We can certainly provide that information to the individual concerned tomorrow when we get back to work.
Jane is in Johannesburg. Good evening to you, Jane.
Hi, good evening.
Yeah, good evening to you. Go ahead.
Doctor, I just wanted you to maybe touch on IUI. Basically, I just wanted to know, what does that procedure entail, and like how many sessions does it take in order for it to be successful?
Intrauterine insemination, it is, Jane, yeah?
Yes, correct. Yes, you're right. Yes.
Dr. Moodley?
Yeah, hi, good evening. So IUI, intrauterine insemination, or artificial insemination, all one and the same term, is generally a fertility treatment reserved for once those investigations I mentioned are done on a couple, mm-hmm. and if no problem is identified, meaning the woman is, she's young, generally we do use the age 35 as a cutoff, but we do individualize. If an individual's ovarian reserve and potential is extremely good, if one or both of her tubes are patent, and if the semen analysis is normal, fulfills the criteria for getting into an egg and making an embryo, then, and that occurs in up to about 40% of patients where you won't find a macroscopic abnormality, then that patient is suitable for the procedure IUI. In essence, it's a procedure that one-ups nature at each step that we know in an attempt to try and improve something that we can't see. And after one attempted IUI, in general, with all those factors, the success rates are extremely high. They can go up to about 65 to 70%. Most clinics would do up to three attempts at IUI. Again, very much patient-dependent, circumstances-dependent, and how you responded in the first cycle will then determine if you go on to number two or number three. But usually, you find the success rate up to cycle three can reach almost 100% if there are no problems.
What is the difference between IUI and IVF then, Doc?
So IUI involves a sort of hyperstimulating an ovary with medication that is subcutaneous injections, that is hormones that are normally released by the brain, but at a much higher level, in an attempt to try and extract from an ovary an excellent follicle that maybe the body wasn't quite doing naturally because of a suboptimal hormonal level or some microscopic process that was hindering the process. We use the medication, and then we do regular transvaginal ultrasound scanning where we monitor the growth of one or more follicles in both the ovaries. And when a follicle reaches a certain size that it most likely has an egg, we give a trigger shot of medication to get that follicle to burst and release an egg into the fallopian tube. And then we get a sperm sample at a particular timed day, and we wash down the sperm, we get the best of the best sperm, put it in a syringe, and we inject it directly into the uterus. So IUI needs the patient's body, the fallopian tube, to do about 30% of the work where we do 70%. And IVF involves essentially 100% of the work being done by a fertility person with the use of a laboratory.
Speak to Mpo in Taung in the Northwest. Good evening to you, Mpo.
Good evening, Aubrey and the doctor.
Go ahead, Mpo.
My question to the doctor is, I was diagnosed with endometriosis in 2004, and then I've had 3 laparoscopy operations, and I'm 47 years old. I just want to find out, is there any chance that I can go through an IVF procedure? Because I don't want to go through that disappointment. I'm still getting periods.
Doc?
Good evening, Paul. So endometriosis is a very, very nasty gynecological condition that is hugely devastating physically, emotionally, and psychologically, and unfortunately does cause a lot of damage, or can cause a lot of damage and harm to an ovary besides the fallopian tubes and the uterus. It really all depends on, at age 40, did you say 45?
47.
Yeah. At age 47, in the absence of any medical problems or conditions, the ovarian reserve for every individual is finite. There will be a time at which there will be no more follicles in an ovary to grow to make a baby, and a person can still be getting a period. And that age is usually around 45. So if you have endometriosis and the endometriosis caused damage or harm to your ovary, compromising that follicular reserve even earlier, then that could have been the reason why you didn't conceive naturally from a younger age. It's impossible for us to say, like I said, we're not God, and we can never say you can never have a baby. But if you were my patient, then I would do that ovarian reserve hormonal level for you as a baseline to see whether in fact there is potential in your ovary to get a follicle to be to get an egg to be released to start the process of making a baby.
Are you saying, therefore, Doc, that Mpo would be a good candidate for IVF?
No, IVF is dependent on an ovary still having follicles, because IVF is a process that where we forcefully extract what is already in a person's ovary. We don't make the follicles. We extract forcefully from the ovary what is already there in an attempt to allow it to grow to get an egg to be released. If there are zero, minimal, good quality follicles, in, as is the case in, unfortunately, women that are older, then that patient may not be a suitable candidate for IVF, or may be a suitable candidate, but then the success rates need to be discussed with the patient, because the success rates will drop the older the patient is.
Mbo, good luck to you, my sister. Thank you very much for the call. Much appreciated. So, Doc, what is the process, therefore, that a patient needs to follow to get to a place where they've got some sort of a conclusive answer that IVF is the way to go? What are the processes that they need to follow?
So I say to my patients, whether they're young, middle-aged, older, actively thinking about having a baby or are actively trying for a baby or have fulfilled the criteria for infertility as mentioned, I say to my patients, those three baseline tests that I mentioned as a starting point are key. We cannot move forward if we don't have that baseline information. Once we have that information, we're able to say to the patient, you are suitable for the most least invasive of interventions like IUI, or you are suitable for IVF, or you are suitable for an even more invasive procedure called ICSI. We then put forward to the patient the procedure, what are the success rates, and then it's up to the patient and the couple to decide how far they would like to go in order to have a baby based on the success rate. And that differs from individual to individual.
Give us a call at 11-883-0702. My guest is Dr. Kasturi Moodley. She's an obstetrician and gynecologist at MediClinic Southern Africa. And really the conversation is the technicalities, the ins and outs around IVF, and whether or not you are a suitable candidate for this procedure, if indeed you've been having difficulties falling pregnant. Let's talk a little bit about, you know, one of the things that I've seen, Doc, is the idea that the woman falls pregnant. Yes, I suppose technically it is exactly that. But I think that a big part of the challenge sometimes is that this process is not embarked on together as a couple. Many guys tend to shy away from the process. To what extent should the process of IVF be embarked on by both the members of this union, of this couple union? To what extent and why would that be important?
Most definitely, I definitely recommend and actually encourage my patients to come with their partners. And in Pietermaritzburg, at the MediClinic where we are based, I'm definitely so excited and so happy to let you know that we have had a fantastic response with regards to patients coming with their partners, couples coming together, and the male individuals asking more questions, being more inquisitive and quite happy to comply with regards to performing the semen analysis, in understanding that it is a very integral part of the process and adds equal weight to discovering what the problem is and in moving forward. And it has been overwhelmingly positive in that regard, which really, really makes me feel very happy in moving forward, in that we certainly are winning. But we certainly encourage all couples come together to understand exactly what's happening in both partners and know that both all investigations are equally important in terms of getting to the bottom of what is going on.
Are you seeing more and more men get involved?
Oh, 100%. In our practice, like I said, 99% of our patients come with their partners voluntarily. They don't have to be convinced. And they are the individuals who have actually researched a bit and are asking the questions as we go through the discussions and are quite happy to comply with regards to us doing the semen analysis in order to identify if there's a problem or not.
Evening, Bra Obs. I'm 47 years old, was not, I don't know what this word is, was not sexually active, I see, in my youth. I don't have a child, never been on contraception. I just stopped my period in September 2023. Is it possible to reverse menopause? Ask this person.
So at present, the simple answer is no. Maybe in the near future, we may be able to revitalize these ovaries and get them functioning at a certain capacity. But unfortunately, ovarian reserve with regards to those follicles and with regards to the release of an egg, like I mentioned previously, is finite. And from the day that our menstrual cycle is initiated at the age of 10 and 11, follicles are already being recruited, unfortunately, whether we like it and choose it or not. And so our follicular reserve slowly declines with every single period that we have until eventually there are no more and there's no more hormones and the ovary shut down, which then is why we enter into the menopause. So essentially, it's not just about that menopause and that your ovarian hormonal levels are low or absent. It's that there is no follicular reserve to get the starting point of an egg.
I remember hearing, and you'll confirm this, or do away with the notion, Doc, that the number of ovaries that a woman has is determined, is predetermined and finite. In other words, from when you are born, your ovaries are already, I mean, your, is it follicles?
Follicles, yes.
Are already predetermined and finite in your ovaries, even as an infant. Is that true?
Yes, it is. We are born with a set number of follicles in each ovary. Yes.
So when somebody says, I am now in the process of menopause, are we saying that the number of follicles in the ovaries is now done with? There's no more ovaries? I mean, no more follicles?
Most likely, yes.
So is that what menopause means?
Well, menopause essentially is when the ovaries have shut down. So in essence, the ovaries work because of hormones, and it is the hormones that recruit a follicle that get an egg to grow. So if there's no more hormones and the ovaries are shut down, then the process that precedes or ends is usually the follicular reserve declines to almost zero. And then the ovarian hormonal levels shut down, and then the ovaries shut down, and you enter into the menopause.
If there was a way, if there is a way of reigniting the hormonal process, would we then be able to get the follicles that are left over, or is that process irreversible?
I think that's a very difficult one. At present, the way the ovary is, the anatomy of an ovary from birth to adolescence, our first period, through your 20s, 30s, 40s, at present physiologically implies that, and with the blood investigations that we do about fertility potential, it would appear that the age at round about which follicular reserve is zero or in negative values is round about 45. And so I don't think one may find good enough follicles. Maybe there may be, but I don't think you may find a good enough follicle that has the potential to go all the way to making an egg that will translate into a baby that will be carried to term. Because that is now, this is why the incidence of the difficulties in conception increase as one gets older, because that follicle has been now in the ovary for 40 versus 35 versus 20 versus 20. So the longer that follicle has been in an ovary, the harder it is for it to do the job. And if it is selected, it unfortunately will not go all the way, which then increases your chances of why am I not yet pregnant, and can sometimes increase the chance of why the body chooses to reject a pregnancy that results in a miscarriage.
So the body can reject a pregnancy?
Oh, 100%. If the body realizes that something is not quite 100%, it is very, very, very clever in what it does. Nothing happens by chance, is what fertility has allowed us to identify. There's always, always, always a reason. It's just that sometimes we're unable to find that reason, but sometimes we're lucky enough to be able to.
Anonymous says, "Hi, Aubrey. In my struggle to conceive, I underwent the very expensive procedure. When the pregnancy spontaneously aborted, I was devastated. It was a solitary journey in spite of the fact that I was under pressure from his family to have a child." Oh, I understand that, Brenda. I so understand that. "I'm glad that the Kale partners are becoming more involved. It's a the male partners are becoming more involved. It's a very lonely journey," says Anonymous. I'm glad that Anonymous has come to I'm sorry, Anonymous.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm glad that she brings this because culturally, I know how difficult it can be. How we can get into a situation where we blame the woman for the pregnancy not happening when sometimes the problem is actually with the man. How do you deal with those issues, doctor? I mean, the name calling, the loneliness, it's just terrible, terrible, terrible for many women out there. When baby isn't coming.
Yeah. It certainly, certainly is. I think by the time a patient or a couple has reached us at the fertility clinic, we take a lot of pride and a lot of effort to ensure that it is a safe, that there is no judgment, and that we do absolutely everything to make sure that both individuals understand the reality of what is going on and what options they have going forward, and that there is absolutely no blame. So that kind of approach I found has sort of alleviated a lot of the baggage that patients come with from the community, from their families, from their friends, from social media. We find that after one or two or three consultations, they are able to leave that baggage, and then they go through the process with us. And somehow the constant communication and the constant reassurance allows them to come out the other side not so scathed. So we make every endeavor to try to minimize that, because we understand that it is huge. And obviously, yeah.
My apologies, Doc. I want to play you a voice note from one of our listeners.
Good evening, Aubrey and the Gaini. I would like to know, why do some women suffer so many miscarriages before actually having a successful IVF and eventually a baby? Thanks, Dima.
Dr. Moli?
She didn't mention whether these miscarriages are happening spontaneously or whether they are miscarriages happening following a fertility treatment. But if a person is having spontaneous natural miscarriages, like I mentioned previously, one of the reasons, possible reasons, could be that the follicle that was selected, the egg that was released, was not a good enough one that the body only recognized after implantation in the uterus and only let go of it at that point, which is then a miscarriage. And it can do that with every cycle, new month that comes thereafter, if it continuously chooses a not good enough follicle. With IVF, although not guaranteed, but the medication that you are using, like I say, forcefully extracts from the ovary, searches for the best of the best follicles that are currently there, interspersed between all the abnormal ones. And so the likelihood of getting a good enough one and getting it to grow with the use of medication and looking at an egg in, in the laboratory under a microscope and even going to the extent of being able to test it to know whether it's normal or not before putting it back into a uterus, then increases the chances of the uterus accepting that and it growing into a baby.
Final call from our listeners. Anonymous is in Pretoria. Hi, Anonymous.
Hi, how are you?
Very good, thanks. Go ahead, Anonymous. Your question or comment for Dr. Moodley?
All right, so my question is, I'm a 30-year-old female, yep, and I was diagnosed with PCOS, but I was so young, I just went for a general scan, and like I don't have any other of the common symptoms because I read up on it, like obesity, excess hair, and I have a regular period every month, besides the scan that showed that I had multiple, PCOS, right? So I just wanted to find out, will that affect my chances of getting pregnant? Because I am married and we've been trying. And what can I do to further seek for assistance?
Thanks very much, Anonymous. PCOS, Doc?
Hi, good evening. So PCOS, polycystic ovarian syndrome, is just a big term for a hormonal imbalance in general, whether it be a marked imbalance in hormones or a slight imbalance in hormones. But like you described, you may not be having a marked abnormality because you are having regular periods. But as mentioned in the conversation prior, if you've been trying with your partner and you've been not successful in the past 12 months or sooner and it is making you a bit anxious, there's probably a good idea to seek the assistance of your gynecologist or a fertility specialist who will then recommend those baseline tests, because we don't make the assumption then that the problem is in the PCOS. We have to exclude the other areas. And once we have that information, if all is normal, you may be a person that is suitable for the fertility treatment of IUI, which then gives very, very, very good success rate.
Thank you very much for that, Doc. I want to thank you so much for agreeing to talk to us this evening. A wonderful moment of education for us. And we'd love to know, how do we get in touch with you if we want to continue this conversation offline with you?
We do. We are the Midlands Fertility Health Centre, based in Peter Maritzburg MediClinic. And I am able to give you our WhatsApp number and our email address that you can put up on your website for the the callers and the listeners to
All right. Dr. Kasturi Moodley, thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate your time.